Today's daf is Pei Zayin. We ended yesterday with the Mishnah. We were discussing where they would bring the grapes from for the wine, different places, and where it was allowed to bring from, what kind you couldn't have sun-dried, right? It said, if you remember, the helustion you couldn't have, but im hevi kasher, you can't bring yashan, Rebbe said, but Chachamim said it's okay. Yashan is more than a year old. Then it was considered not good, right? Nowadays, wine, old wine is considered better. No, but they're talking about, I assume they don't mean old grapes. I assume they meant old wine, wine that was sitting around. I think that's what they mean. I think so. But maybe you're right. Maybe it's the grapes. I don't know. I thought it was the wine. Okay. Emivim lo matok, lo mushan, lo mubushal. Remember, it may be pasul. Those are dafka pasul, right? There's some that are okay if you bring, some that are not okay if you bring. Then we had about the ones, the delayot. I actually didn't explain it well enough. The delayot are the ones that are hanging like on stakes or hanging off of a tree rather than close to the ground. Then they would put them in the small chaviot, right? And then with a little bit of space on the top, so there would be some air. And according to the Mishnah, so it would, the good smell would come out when you would open it. And then you have to worry about the stuff at the top and the stuff at the bottom, right? And the stuff at the top, you end up with this white kind of powdery stuff. Or, you know, the... mold. I don't know if it's mold, but some sediment at the top and then the sediment at the bottom. It's not exactly sediment, what would you call it? It would kind of like get caked, you know, things get dried up a little at the top. That's the way I envision it.
This translates it as mold.
Mold, oh yeah, okay, mold. But you bring it from the middle. In fact, I saw even that it could be they put the spout in the middle, but that was the idea, that the spout came from the middle, and that's what we were talking about. When the guy hit the reed, you know, to tell them to stop, remember, you couldn't speak it because it would affect it. We're going to get to that in the Gemara today. So that, you know, be coming out of the middle, and then all of a sudden you'd end up, and that's the question, is it the bottom stuff or is it the top stuff that's coming? You know, and then he would tell them to stop. Okay, and then we ended with Rabbi Yosef, Rabbi Yehuda, who basically shows, because of this pasuk, tmimim yu lachem, u'michatam, v'nizkehem, and it mentions all of them in context of tmimim, that everything has to be of a more perfect type. Okay, then again, the Gemara is going to ask, like it keeps asking, do you get malkot for actually doing it? And just because he says this doesn't necessarily mean you get malkot. But he does show that the minachot and the nisachim have to be tmimim, like a balmum. But again, then would that translate into malkot? Okay, so we're starting with the Gemara on Pei Zayin, where it says Gemara, six lines down. Eim v'im lo matok v'lo mevushal v'lo meushan. V'im evi pasul, right? You can't bring sweetened grapes and not cooked grapes and not smoked grapes. V'im evi pasul. V'hakatani resha eim v'im et halustion. Maybe kasher. Didn't we say sun-dried grapes you can't bring? And what's the problem with sun-dried grapes? They're sweet. And what do you see here? It says in the beginning part of the Mishnah, helustion, you can't bring, but if you brought, it's kasher. And sweet grapes, you can't bring, but if you brought, they're pasul. So those seem to be the same thing, and yet the halacha is different on the bidyevet level, right? If you already brought it, would it be kasher or pasul? Amar avina kroch vitane. He says, actually, put those two together. They really mean one and the same. And the halacha is the same. And obviously, what's the halacha? Is it kasher or is it pasul? We don't really know. Some people translate, put them together and say that b'dievet, it's going to be pasul. And the other ones and other interpretations say, no, put them together, meaning they're all one and the same, and it may be kasher. So the conclusion of this Gemara is very unclear, or the conclusion of at least this opinion. That was Ravina's opinion. Rav Ashi Yamar, Chulia de Shim Shalom Mais, Chulia de Pera Mais. There's a difference between sun-dried grapes. They don't get disgusting. Okay, that's like an okay thing, meaning b'dievet, it's going to be kasher. That's a halustion. Versus grapes that are sweet to begin with. As you don't, they're saying if you make wine from sweet grapes, they're inherently sweet, that's going to be a bad wine. But if you make wine from grapes that were sweetened by the sun, that's already something different. So just because that's sweet and that's sweet doesn't mean that they're the same type of sweet in terms of the relevance to how it would affect the wine.
It's the same in modern times.
Uh-huh. It's exactly the same.
Depending on when you pick the wines, depends on how sweet they are, but you can get, so the ones you picked in the middle of the day, the sun, right, are sweeter than the ones picked in the morning.
Uh-huh.
and other wines picked a different.
That it affects it. The question is the wine worse or better? Right. Okay. That's a question in terms of this. It's not clear. Okay. So now, Eimibin Yashan Divirevi Chachamim Machshirim. Amar Chizkia, my time at Rebbe. Where does he get this? The Yain Yashan is a problem. Amar Kra Lakeves Yain. Okay, here's the Pasuk, Bamidbar Kavchet. We're going to quote a lot from Bamidbar Kavchet today. Okay, Bamidbar Kavchet is where we get through, right? B'yom HaShabbat Shnei Kvasim B'nei Shana Tamimim Im Rashi Chad Shechem. And it really starts out with the Korban Tamid at the Keves Chad Taseh B'Boker. And it gives all the measurements and what you need to bring with each sacrifice. So in Pasuk Yudalid, it says, V'nizkehem chatziya hin yela parush l'shida hin la'ayel Rubi'itach hin la'keves yayin. Okay, so notice it says, right? Rubi'itach hin of the Keves, well, of wine you have to bring. That's the amount of wine you need to bring. But it says lakeves yayin. So, right, it could have said revi'itayin yayin lakeves. So they darshan this strange, seemingly strange lashon. Ma keves ben shnato, af yayin ben shnato. They say, just like the keves has to be in its first year, also the wine has to be in its first year. Ve'im ma keves ben shtei shanim pasul, af yayin ben shtei shanim pasul. And just like a keves after 2 years will be pasul, also the wine in its second year basically will be pasul. Okay, so they say basically, number one, it teaches you it has to be within the year. And number two, it teaches you that it's actually disqualified if it's in its second year, right? You might have said, okay, well, it's supposed to be in its first year. But if you brought it anyway, it's okay. But no. Okay. First they say, La keves yayin means ma keves ben shnato, af yayin ben shnato, and then they question it, and they say, if you're going to say it's like a keves, then a keves ben shtei shanim is pasul. And then we would assume also, yayin ben shtei shanim would be pasul, and that's a problem. Because v'chitei machanami, if you really want to say that, means bidieved, if you brought the wine in its second year, it would be disqualified, we know that that's not the case. Because it says, V'hatanya yayin ben shtei shanim lo yavi, v'imevi kasher. Okay, it says here, if it's in its second year, you can't bring it, but if you did, it would be kasher. Now remember, there was a machloket in our Mishnah. What was the machloket? Rebbe said, Eimivim yashan, and chachamim machshirim. So what do you see here? Chachamim say it's totally fine. Rebbe says it's not fine. So who's the author of this braita who says you can't bring yayin yashan? Obviously Rebbe. And what do you see? That v'diyeved, it's okay. So if Rebbe's making that comparison from lakeves yayin, then the comparison should be across the board. So now we're going to finish reading that inside. Man shamat le da'amar lo yavi. Who says lo yavi yayin yashan? Rebbe. V'ka'amar, and he also, and the braita continues to say, assuming the author is Rebbe, im hevi kasher. So how could you say that he learns it from lakeves yayin? If he learns it from lakeves yayin, we should learn it from lakeves yayin all the way. And it should be disqualified if it's in its second year. So therefore, we bring a different proof for Rebbe. Ela amarava hainu tama de Rebbe dechtiv al tera yayin ki dadam. Okay, that's a pasuk that talks about wine, and that is right. What's special about wine? That it's red. And the assumption was that after a year already, it loses its strong red color, and therefore, if it was already in its second year, it already doesn't look like the real strong, good wine. And therefore, it wouldn't be good, but b'dieved, it would work. Okay, he learns it from there, and he doesn't learn it anymore from lakeves yayin. Okay, remember, we didn't know what Rebbe's, Chizkiah suggested that was where Rebbe got it from. We didn't really know where Rebbe got it from. He suggested it was from lakeves yayin. That gets rejected, and Rava brings a different answer. Remember, that meant don't bring from those that are draped on stakes from high above or on trees, but bring from the ones lower to the ground. Tana, kramim ha'avudim pa'amayim b'shana. Okay, then it also said there that you should bring from umin ha'kramim ha'avudim, the ones that were worked, okay, that they hoed the ground, okay, which is going to make the grapes grow better. So now the Braita says it has to be a kerem that was worked twice a year. Okay, not just, let's say, once a year, but it has to be twice a year. Rav Yosef Havale Karna de Pardesa, he had the corner of a Pardes, de Rafik Beit Shvei Rifka, that he hoed it many times, an extra time. Va'avid chamra de darimaya al chadrein. The wine was so good from there because he hold it an extra time, right? I assume they mean a third time. And the wine came out so good that you needed double the amount of water to dilute it. Okay, because remember, they diluted their water. It was like a concentrate. So this was such good wine. This is just a story to tell you that the wine is better when you work the land. Lo ayu konsim otam b'chatzavim gedolim. Tana. Okay, another braita about this. Chaviot, what are these chaviot? Kadiot, ludiot, ubenoniot. They were these kadim, these jugs that came from Lod, and they were average size. Okay, they weren't teeny, they weren't huge. Ein menichim otam shtayim, ela achat achat. You couldn't put two right next to each other either, because they were worried that if one went bad, then the other would also go bad. Okay, so they would keep them separated from each other so one wouldn't have an effect on the other. Right, so again, we talked about this. The gizbar would stand there. So we mentioned today that it seemed that the spout they would put in the center, right, in the middle third, so they would be coming out from the best part. And then once it got, you know, probably once the top part started lowering and coming down, and then you'd start with some of the white stuff, right? There's a debate, is this gear, is it white? Is the gear something else? Right, we think of gear, we think of chalk. Okay, so some actually say it, claim it's something else, but some say it's like, you know, the white powdery stuff. So anyway, what would he do? He would start hitting the kaneh, and then they would know to shut the spout. Tana zarak hagir shel shmarim, gizbar higish b'kaneh, right? This dafka talks about the shmarim, the sediment at the bottom. So gizbar higish b'kaneh. So now they ask, v'lema lemeimar, why wouldn't he just say, close the spout? Or stop, or something. So they say, "Misayele Rabbi Yochanan." This supports the statement of Rabbi Yochanan. De'am Rabbi Yochanan, an interesting statement. Kishem shahad dibor yafel b'samim, kach dibor ra layayin. Okay, in the same way that speaking is good for the bisamim, the assumption is when they were making the bisamim of the. Okay, so now there's a debate exactly. Is it while the bisamim are burning, and is it for the incense? Right? It seems to be for the incense. I was actually thinking of, you know, people talking to plants. They say that that's good, and maybe that's what they're referring to. And the Mefreshim seem to be talking about, some people actually say it's not bisamim, it's basamim. What are the basamim? They're the people who grind the spices for the ktoret, for the incense. And they say that they have multiple people grinding them, and they wanted them to grind at the same rate. So if they would speak, they would kind of keep to the same beat, you know, the same rate of grinding, and that would help them, and therefore it's basamim and not bisamim, which would make this statement a little uneven, right? Because one is the basamim and one is the yayin, right? It would make more sense if it's spices and the wine. Those are two comparable things rather than the people making the spices. But again, it could be, you know, still speech is good for one thing, not good for something else. Obviously, it was a struggle to figure out what exactly speech is good for and why dibor is bad for yayin and why that would affect the yayin, but anyway, this is where I said before that the dibor is bad for the yayin. Okay, Rabbi Yossi bar Rabbi Yehuda Omer. So this was the end part about the about if you use the kmachim, right? If it has kmachim in it, it's pasul. You can't use it for the libations. By Rabbi Yochanan, hikdisho ma'ushil ke'alav mishum balmum. Again, the same question we keep asking. If you sanctify it for use as the for nisachim, would you get malkot for it? Okay, if it has this the mold in it or whatever we refer to that.
Kmachim. Google says it's dregs.
Dregs. That's a good word. Okay, the dregs. But the dregs are the bottom part.
Dregs are at the bottom.
The dregs are at the bottom.
Dregs, mold. They used all those.
Right. I would think that the dregs are the bottom.
Dregs and sediment are both way at the bottom.
Right.
Whereas mold floats.
Right. Okay. Again, for these two dapim, you need to go to go see where they make the olive oil and go to a winery. Okay. Hikdisho, it's a good thing to do first thing in the morning for dapiyomi. Okay. Hikdisho maushil ke'alav mishum ba'amum. And when we get to later, well, you have to go to the bread workshop for the later part of today's stuff. By Rabbi Yochanan. Hikdisho maushil ke'alav mishum ba'amum. Since we say it's disqualified, do we say it's like a balmum? And therefore, if you bring it, if you sanctify it for the Beit HaMikdash, you would get malkot. Oh, Dilma ein balmum ela bebehema. Where do we say the real balmum is only by behema? We're getting used to this question. Teku. We don't have an answer as usual. Tana Rabbanan. Now they bring a braita. Now this is an interesting question. Why this braita didn't appear in the Mishnayot? So far they've been telling us where you get the wine from, you know, the grapes, where you get the oil from, right? The different things, where they come from. The solet. So this braita talks about where do we get the animals from. Elim mimoav, kfasim mihebron, agalim misharon, gozalot meharamelech. Rabbi Yehuda omer, mivim kfasim shegovhan kirochban. Okay, that are as tall as they are wide. Okay, the idea is that they're supposed to be fat. So the assumption was they're reasonably tall. You want their width to be as great as their height. So it's a bit of a question as to why this didn't appear in the Mishnah, right? Why the Mishnah didn't say. Could be that the Mishnah didn't think that animals need to be brought from specific locations. And it could be that they only thought that the solet, all those things, but the animals could be brought from anywhere. Another possibility is that it's just not the topic here for the Mishnah. The Mishnah just organizes things by topic. We're now in Minachot, which relates to the Minachot and the Nisachim, but it doesn't relate to the animals. Obviously, then the question should be, why didn't they mention it in Zvachim? If you remember, they didn't mention this in Zvachim. So that's why the other interpretation maybe makes a little more sense, that maybe there was a debate about whether you really need to bring them from specific places. Amar Rav Bar Rav Shila, which can make sense, because the quality of animals might not be as different as, although maybe it would be. Right? Okay, now we need to go to a slaughterhouse. Okay. It's the problem when you do Daf Yomi, you go through so much at once, you have to go to four places just for this one daf. Amar Rav Bar Rav Shila, my time at Rav Yehuda, where does he get this? The Govham Kirachban. Dichtiv Yir'em Miknecha Bayom Ahu Kar Nirchav. Okay, and I understand kar nirchav means this, you know, the animal should be nirchav. Right? This is a pasuk that's describing in Yeshayahu the plenty that will be. Okay, v'natam mitar zarachasher tuzrat adama v'lechem tuat aretz v'yad dashen v'shamen yir'em k'nechav yomu kar nirchav. And they say the kar is referring to the keves and nirchav is wide, right? So basically they're saying from there you see that that's something that's praiseworthy, so therefore we should bring that for on the Mizbech. Since he darshan this pasuk, we're now going to see another pasuk he darshans, Rav Bar Rav Shila. This doesn't have anything to do with our topic, although maybe one could say it does. K'tiv achomotayach Yerushalayim, ifkadeti shomrim kol hayom v'kol halayla, right? Famous pasuk, we know the song. Here's the end of that pasuk, okay? And if you, right, what would we always think the shomrim are for? Protection, right? But now it seems, lo yechashu hamazkirim et Hashem al dami lachem. Okay, they weren't silent, those people. What were the Shomrim doing? They were reminding God, Mazkirim et Hashem. Okay, which could mean itself in the opposite, or I don't know, itself in the opposite. It could mean two things, right? Mazkirim et Hashem means they're reminding the people about God, or maybe they're reminding God. Okay? Al dami lachem, don't be silent. Okay? My Amre, so now what's the drasha we need? We need to know what were they saying, these Shomrim. Okay, right, it's interesting. We think about this pasuk all the time. We never knew that they were actually speaking, right? Because we'd never sing the second part of the song. The second part of the pasuk. Amar Rava Bar Rav Shila. Oh, by the way, it's a pasuk from Yeshayahu also. Maybe that's also why they bring this, because it's another drashah he has on a pasuk in Yeshayahu. So what were they saying? Ata tachum terachem tzion. They were reminding God, get up and redeem Zion, right? Rav Nachum Bar Yitzchak Amar, bonei Yerushalayim Hashem. Okay, Nidchei Yisrael Yechanes. Okay, also reminding God about the kibbutz galuyot, right? That we're supposed to bring back all the Jews from all over and rebuild Jerusalem. Umi karamai haviam, right? Now, before the destruction, the assumption is this is after the destruction. They're obviously saying this. The question is, what would they say before the destruction? The assumption was they were shomrim then also. And what is mazkirim et Hashem in that context? What would that be? Amar Rav Bar Rav Shila, ki bachar Hashem b'tzion ival l'moshav lo. They'd be saying, this is where God chose, right? And maybe you could say that the two different, right, the difference in the time frame would affect whether mazkirim et Hashem is reminding God or reminding the people, right? In other words, it's almost like it's like that concept we talked about the other day of kochiva otzem yadi, that when they're in Yerushalayim and everything's good, they have to be reminded about God. When things are bad, we don't need to remind people about God. They're searching God. It's God we need to remind about us. So it's an interesting drasha here. Okay, Hadron Alaf Kol Korbanot Tzibur, and then we can actually connect it with the previous drasha that we had. Okay, end of the ninth parak, starting the tenth, which, remember, isn't necessarily the tenth, could be the ninth, right? Remember, the tenth was the Omer. Okay, so now we're at that, possibly the ninth, possibly the tenth. Shtei midot shel yavesh hayu b'mikdash. Okay, now we're going to talk about the different measurements that there were in the mikdash. Okay, the different measuring utensils that they had. There were two different measurements for measuring dry ingredients. Now, this doesn't mean there were only two kelim in the whole Beit HaMikdash. It means there were two sizes that they would have. They obviously had many of them, because how else could we be doing multiple things at the same time, right? Everyone would be waiting for that one measuring cup. It would be impossible. I want to make sure you don't misunderstand the Mishnah. Shtei midot shel yavesh hayu b'mikdash, isaron v'chatzi isaron. Okay, there was an isaron, and there was an half an isaron. Why did you need the half an isaron? So you need the half an isaron for the minchat chavitin of the Kohen Gadol. If you remember, he would take an isaron, we would split it, and then he would do half in the morning and half in the evening. If you remember, we had to bring it all together first, right? He had to bring everything to the Beit HaMikdash in the morning, and then we would split half and half. So that's what you would need the chatzi isaron for. And the isaron was for most of the other menachot, right? You'd measure the solet as an isaron. Rabbi Meir Omer, isaron, isaron, v'chatzi isaron. You'd have two esronim. Okay, obviously, doesn't mean, like I told you, we already said we're going to have multiple ones. So what did you need? Two, meaning there's two different types of isaron measuring cups. Isaron, ma hayam shamesh, shebo hayam oded l'chol ha-menachot. Okay, you would use the isaron for all the menachot. Lo hayam oded lo b'shlosha lapar v'lo b'shlosnaim la'ayel ela modedan isronot. Okay, so you wouldn't measure when you need shlosha isronim lapar v'shne isronim la'ayel v'isaron l'chad l'keves. Right, so the ones that were two and three, you didn't have a two-cup measuring cup or a three, you know, a two isaron or a three isaron. You would do them each individual. You would do three esronim, for example, for the par. You do an isaron, isaron, isaron. Okay. Ela modedan esronot. Okay. Chatzi isaron mahayam shamesh, shebo hayam odei chavitei kohen gadol, mechza baboker u'mechza ben harbayim. Okay, that's what you would need the chatzi isaron for. Soon we're going to see why you need the two. We still didn't explain, according to Rabbi Meir, why you have two different measuring utensils for the isaron. Tanya, Braita. Haya Rabbi Meir Omer, ma tamud lomar isaron isaron lakeves ha'achad. Okay, like I said, we're going to spend a lot of time in Bamibar Kavchet today. So here in Bamibar Kavchet, Pasuk Kavtes, it says, okay, b'yom ha-bikurim, it happens to be about the bikurim, the shtei alechem, b'kravtem, olah l'rech nichoch la'ashem. Okay, for the shiva kvasim, if you remember, we bring these, the parim b'nei bakar shnayim, ayel echad, shiva kvasim, right, this went with the shtei alechem. Uminchatam solet mincha b'lula b'shemen, shlosha shem l'par ha'achad, shnei shem l'ayel ha'achad. Isaron, isaron l'keves ha'achad. So what does he say? What? It just should say, isaron l'keves ha'achad. What does it mean, isaron, isaron l'keves ha'achad? So he says it must be, milamed sheshtei esronot hayu b'mikdash. Echad gadush ve'echad machuk. One was, you would heap, you would kind of, I can't really envision what this would look like. But one you would use is a flat measurement. You would measure, one would be a measuring cup the way we have a measuring cup. It's a one cup measuring cup where when you fill it up and you flatten it out at the top, it's exactly a cup. Okay, that makes sense, right? This would be exactly an isaron. The other one would be that when you heaped, would only be an isaron if you had it heaping.
Smaller cup.
Right, it's a smaller cup.
It's just less precise.
So it would be a little less precise, which is going to be a problem. We'll see for where it would be a problem. But the assumption is that because it would be heaping, you could maybe heap a little bit extra on it. Okay. In other words, when you do exactly a flat cup, okay, think about it. If you measure things in the kitchen, so you know that sometimes when you do something exactly flat, if you're not very precise, you might end up with a little less because you won't fill it into all the little teeny holes because it'll end up overflowing. So that was the problem with the machuk one. The gadush one, so then you can always add a little bit extra and then you'd end up with a little more. Obviously, then you miss the precision. So echad gadush ve'echad machuk. So now, what do we use each one for? Gadush shebo hayam oded l'chol ha-menachot. Because in the menachot, what do we want, right? Those are the individual menachot that people are bringing. You want extra. You want it to be done ba'ayin yafa. Okay? But machuk shebo, machuk shebo hayamoded lechavite kohen gadol. For the kohen gadol, though, we wanted it to be precise for the chavitin. Okay? Because he's going to then, the other, what's the issue really? The issue is, maybe we want more precision, but also the issue is that what happens? First you put it in the isaron, and then you split it up into two. And when you walk it over to the other kli, the assumption is, you know, you move it to get to the other kli, there's a, if you have it gadush, it's going to spill. And then you're going to lose, and then you're going to have not the right amount. So then we had no choice but to use the machuk. And the idea is, adif to use the machuk, but if you can't, then you use the gadush. Okay, now notice, this is only Rabbi Meir. What we're left to figure out is, if according to Chachamim, there was only one, was it machuk or gadush? Okay, we don't know. Was it heaping or was it flat? So we'll get to that soon. Chachamim omrim lo haya sham eli isaron echad. Shneemar, vi isaron echad lakeves ha'echad. Now, it could have just said, vi isaron lakeves ha'echad. Remember, we do shlosha lapar, shneesrim la'al, vi isaron echad. Now, you could have said, vi isaron. Remember, we're so used to saying this in our tefillah that it just kind of has a ring, right? Shlosha lapar, shneesrim la'al, isaron echad. It's hard for you to imagine. What do you mean? But really, Isaron means one Isaron. So you really wouldn't need to say Isaron Echad. Im ke matabalomer Isaron Isaron. So now you have to explain to him, according to him, right? Chachamim, who don't think Isaron Isaron means two measuring cups. Why does it say both? Lirabot chatzi Isaron. It means there's two measuring cups, but one is an Isaron and one is a half an Isaron. For Rabbi Meir, chatzi Isaron menale. So where does he get chatzi Isaron from? Nafkaleme vi Isaron. Okay, this is from a different pasuk where it's us. So there's a debate. Some people say it comes from the vi isaron echad lakeves ha'echad. Okay, there's the vav, and as what he says is the vav of the vi isaron comes to teach you there's an additional one. But some people say, this is actually interesting, because a lot of these pasukim repeat themselves, so when they come up with a pasuk, it's unclear which pasuk they're referring to. So we said, isaron isaron lakeves ha'echad, the first one that we quoted, right, was from Bamibar Kaf Chet Kaf Tet. Why did I say that? Because the Torah or quotes that is the pasuk. But if you look in the pasukim there in Perek Kaf Tet, when it talks about Sukkot, okay, there also it says V'isaroni Saron LaKeves HaEchad, the same thing but with a vav. So some people actually claim that that's the pasuk they were referring to. They just didn't quote it as vi'isaron isaron. They quoted it as isaron isaron because that's the part that they were focusing on. And now he says the vi'isaron, and that makes a lot more sense because then you end up, they're all in the same pasuk. Vi'isaron isaron means three. Vi'isaron and isaron. And that kind of works nicely. The problem is that not everybody thought those were the pasukim because it's quoted earlier as isaron isaron without the vav, so they assumed it was a different verse. And I don't know, to me it seems like that's the pshat, that this, it makes more sense to read it as that's all, it's all from that one pasuk. Alternatively, you'd have to say it was from the V'isaron Echad L'Keves Echad that we just quoted a minute ago. The Rabbanan, what about Rabbanan? So why don't they see the Vav is adding? Obviously, Vav lo darshi, right? They don't darshan the Vav. Rabbi Meir, hi V'isaron Echad L'Keves Echad. So if V'isaron Echad L'Keves Echad is teaching you, according to Chachamim, that there was only one Isaron, so what do they do with the word Echad? My Avid Lei. Hahu, shelo yimdo lo b'shal shlosha lapar v'lo b'shal shnayim la'aya. It's to teach you, you always use the Isaron Echad. It's for all your measuring, you use that one Isaron, even when you need two and three. There's no measuring cup that has a three Isaron or a two Isaron. Rabbanan, where does Rabbanan learn that halacha from? Because they also learn, right? They also think that you don't use this isaron, you know, the two isaron cup or a three isaron cup. Nafkalehu min nikudo. Okay, what is nikudo? If you remember, we've seen in a number of places where there's dots on top of certain words or certain letters in the Torah. Okay, so here's one where there's a dot we're going to read now. Detanya Amar Rabbi Yossi, Lama Naku Vav Shebe Emsa Isaron. Okay, this is, and I'll pass around the Tanakh so you can see, although it's very hard to see, because it's on top of the Vav of Isaron. So the Vav of Isaron in my Tanakh, which is not a tikkun, I should have brought the tikkun actually, I have one. But anyway, the Vav on top of Isaron has the dot on top of the Vav, but you'll see a larger dot on top of that dot, okay? You just have to look carefully. Those whose eyes aren't as good might not notice it. But there's a vav, be'emtza, the isaron in pasuk, isaron, isaron, la keves ha'achad, the one I was talking about in the context of Chag Sukkot in Perek Kaftet. Okay, that pasuk has a dot on top of the first, the second vav. That's why I say vav sheba emtsa. V'isaron has two vavs. There's a vav in the beginning and a vav in the end of the own part. So the vav at the end of the word, even though they say ba emtsa, they mean the end of the word. That has a little dot on top. Okay, so he learns it. So lama nekuvav sheba emtsa isaron to shel isaron rosh shel isaron rishon shel yom tov rishon shel chag, right, of the first Isaron, of the one that mentioned in Sukkot, to teach you, Shelo yimdo lo b'shal gimel lapar v'lo b'shal shnayim la'ayil. Okay, that's what he says, that dot is coming to teach you. Interesting that a dot would teach you that, right? But the dot obviously is teaching you something, although maybe not necessarily, because here it says, Rabbi Meir nikudo lo darish. What does Rabbi Meir do? Because he learns it from the other pasuk. Oh, he just doesn't darshan the dot. Okay, you'd have to explain according to Rabbi Meir, so why is there a dot? There must be some reason there's a dot. But it doesn't relate to it here.
See Tosfot number 231 for an explanation as to why Rav Meir does not expound the
Ah, okay. So we can look thereafter. Okay. Chatzi Yisaron Mahayam Shamesh Shebo Hayam Oded L'Chavitei Kohen Gadol. Okay, so remember, the Kohen Gadol, we measure in this Chatzi Yisaron. Because you would, right? So now, Moded, what do you mean? What? It says he would measure it in the Chatzi Yisaron. It doesn't really make any sense. Why? Rimini contradicts this other source. Right, you wouldn't bring half a isaron of solet and half an isaron of solet. What would you do? You bring a whole thing. Ela maybe isaron shalem v'chotzeu, exactly as we discussed. Right, that's why they would put it in the machuk one so that it wouldn't fall as he goes to split it up into the others. So you're certainly not measuring it in the other kli. It doesn't make sense. You'd be measuring it in the chatzi isaron. You already have one isaron. If you're going to put it into two kelim, you're not doing that for measuring purposes. Doesn't mean measure. It means split it up, okay? That's what it's supposed to be. Now, the truth is, it's not exactly accurate because it is actually to measure. That's when you measure each half, right? Even though it's, I guess if you had two bowls that were exactly the size, it would, you know, it would be divided. If you divide it evenly, you wouldn't need to measure it really. But the point is, it's something between measuring and.
From the full isaron.
It may just be the initial measure.
What do you mean, the initial
measuring? The initial measuring has to be in full isaron. If, when you divide it, you measure it into two halves.
No, but then it also has to be equal. So in essence, because they both have to be equal after, you're still sort of measuring, but the point is you've already done the major measuring because you put it in isaron, now you're just splitting it into two. Okay, although it does sort of still need to be measured because each one needs to be exact. Ba'amine Rami Barhama Merev Chista. Rami Barhama asked the question from Chista. Chatzi isaron l'Rabbi Meir gadush haya. Now, what about, I mentioned before that we didn't really mention about Chachamim, but what about Rabbi Meir's half an Isaron? Would that be flat, or would that be the overflowing one? So then they say, V'tibai lach l'Rabbanan. You should ask the same question according to Rabbanan. L'Rabbanan, Isaron gufei kamibayelehu, gadush haya omachukaya. In other words, if you're asking the question about the Chatzi Isaron, you should ask the same question about Chachamim. What about their one isaron? Was it gadush or machuk? Amar le midi Rabbi Meir nishma le Rabbi Meir and midi Rabbi Meir nishma le Rabbanan. From Rabbi Meir himself, we can figure out what he holds about the chatzi isaron, and from what Rabbi Meir holds, we can also figure out what Rabbanan holds. How so? Midi Amar Rabbi Meir isaron machuk, chatzi isaron ami machuk. If already, and what's the point? You have to think about what's the point of the gadush. The point of the gadush, we said, was to have it plentiful, that it would be extra. But if you've already measured it out in the machuk, so you don't need a gadush anymore. Once we split it into the two, we can have it in the machuk, which is anyway a more exact measurement. So therefore, we're going to assume it was machuk. L'Rabbanan, nami machuk. Okay, and therefore, midi Rabbi Meir machuk, L'Rabbanan nami machuk. And then we can assume that since Rabbi Meir holds it was machuk, the chatzi isaron, the Rabbanan must also hold the chatzi isaron was machuk. And then if he holds the chatzi isaron as machuk, he obviously holds the other one was machuk. That's their assumption. Ba'amine Rabbi Meir, Rami Barchama Merav Chista. Chavitei Kohen Gadol, b'meh mechalkan l'chalot, b'yad o b'kli. How do you split it into, okay, now this is a big question. If you remember, we talked about that you take, so how does the Chavitei Kohen Gadol work? You take a holy saron, you already just said, you split it into two measurings of chatzi saron. And now from each chatzi saron, you're supposed to make, or let's put it this way, from the whole thing, you're supposed to make 12 loaves. which means that from each one, in theory, you're supposed to make six. I don't know if you remember this, but we learned a while ago, not so long ago, we talked about the Rambam has a strange shita, that how would you split the 12 loaves in half? You'd actually make all the loaves,
cut each one in half,
and then cut each one in half. So according to the Rambam, the question would be, how do you cut them in half? How do you measure exactly half? Okay? According to others, so now there's still a wide range of opinions, otherwise you would split them into two separate isronot of solet, or half isron, right? You'd have a chatzi isron. Then you make the dough. Now, would you make the dough? The assumption is you want six equal loaves and six equal loaves. So would you make the dough, each half dough, and then make the loaves, and then how would you measure out how much dough you use for each loaf? Or would you make six batches within each one of solet? And then the question would be, how would you measure out the solet? You would take that half isaron and split it into six. How would you measure that out? Because we said the smallest measure went with the chatzi isaron. And then maybe you would do the kneading of each one separately. Okay? Because each one also needed, I think it's a reva log of shemen. So would you put the shemen? Some people say you put the shemen into the solet directly. Some people say, no, you'd make the dough and then add the shemen to each dough. So there's a whole debate about how this was done, and then the question would be what we're asking about. Which splitting are we talking about even that he's asking about, okay? But at some point, you need to measure something, okay, whatever it might be. So would you do it biyad or bikli? So the answer, pshita de biyad, obviously you would do it by hand. De'i bikli, tortani yachnis. This is an interesting answer. It's obvious that you do it biyad, because if you did it bikli, what, you're going to bring weights and scales into the Beit HaMikdash? The assumption was you'd have to start weighing them, right, to make sure they're all even. And of course you wouldn't bring weights and scales into the Beit HaMikdash. Okay, now you might wonder, why is it so hot? V'yachnis, the Gemara even asks, so what? Bring weights and scales in. So here's an interesting, this would go with like the superstitious type of things, I would say, maybe. Because it's mentioned in the cursing, okay, in the curses, where in Vayikra, okay, it talks about, I have to find the pasuk now, does it quote it here in the Torah word? Yeah. Okay, in Vayikra kavav kavav, okay, it says, Bishivri lachem matel lechem, va'afu eser nashim lachmechem b'tanur achav. One of the curses is, right, that 10 women are going to bake their bread in one oven, right? Try to imagine cooking for Shabbos with 10 people in one oven, right? It's hard enough. Two people in an oven? Beheshivu lachmechem b'mishkal. And you're going to start weighing your bread, okay? In other words, it's a bad sign. It's a sign of poverty, famine, that people start weighing their bread. Because bread is usually something that you have in plenty of, and you don't have to start weighing it. People starting to weigh, right, you think about in the Holocaust, right, every little crumb of bread was taken very, you know, was, like that's the idea, that we don't want to be measuring our bread, and therefore bringing this scales into the Beit HaMikdash and starting measuring our breads is a siman of the klala, and we don't want that to come into the Beit HaMikdash. Ba'aminei Rami Barchama Mirav Chista. Another question. Shulchan mau shikadesh kmatzim begodesh shelo. Okay, now we're using the Godesh in a different, it's still a Godesh, but the Shulchan was flat. Okay, normally if you have a clay Kodesh, it has sides to it, right? And therefore, whatever's inside becomes sanctified. So what if you put something on the Shulchan, would it sanctify it? So the question here is asked about a Kometz. There's a three-way machloket about whether the Kometz means the Kometz of Livona, which would go on the Shulchan, usually in a bazich, right, in a dish. Let's say you just put the Kometz of Livona, right, the handful, Kometz just means handful. You put the Kometz of Livona on the Shulchan. Since the Shulchan doesn't have a rim, okay, and there's not, right, it's just the overflow of the table, would it sanctify? Would that be considered in a kli sharet? Some people say it's talking about if you happen to, since you could take the kmitza of the mincha in the hechal, what if you were in the hechal, you took the kmitza and instead of putting it in the kli sharet, you put it on the shulchan, would that work? Some people say it's actually referring to both. Could be, right, either the lavona that was not in a bowl or the kometz of your mincha. So anyway, either which way, they're asking, what does it work? Mid mekadesh lechem, kmatzim nami mekadesh, since it sanctifies the bread that sits on top of it, right, because that's how it becomes sanctified when it goes on the shulchan, so maybe it would also sanctify the kmatzim. O dilma, dechazele mekadesh, delo chazele lo mekadesh. Or do you say the shulchan only has power, so to speak, to sanctify what's supposed to be on it in the way it's supposed to be on it, right? And then maybe you'd say the levon is supposed to be on it, but in its own dish. So Amalei, eino mekadesh. He says, says, no, it doesn't. It's not. Doesn't sanctify. So now they question him. Imi, really? V'hamar Rabbi Yochanan l'divrei ha'omer tefachayim v'metzach kofel nimtza shulchan mekadesh 15 tefach lemala. Okay, what does this mean? This means, okay, if you went to the bread workshop, okay, this is helpful. Someone actually wrote me yesterday, if anyone's interested in going to the bread workshop. Someone wants to go on December 30th, and they're looking for a group to get together. So if anybody wants to go, you can speak to them at Seidel's Bakery. Anyway, so those who went to the bread workshop know that there's this whole debate about how the Lechem HaPanim looked. Okay, there was a bit of a problem, because the Shulchan was an Amma wide, which is about an Amma's 5 Tfachim, and the bread was 10 tefachim long, and it was supposed to go along the width. It was right; it didn't go lengthwise, it went widthwise. There was no way, that's how they would fit, like 6 rows lengthwise. So the bread goes lengthwise, and it's 10 tefachim. Now it has to be on the table in order to become sanctified. So the assumption was that 2.5 tefachim on either side went in. And the basic, according to this opinion, the bread was shaped in a, how would you describe the shape? It was flat at the bottom. What?
Upside down chet.
Okay, an upside down chet. Okay, or like a field goal kind of post, right? It's got flat at the bottom and 2 sides coming up. So this is 5. This is 5 tefachim, the length of it, and that fits perfectly on the table. And then it's 2.5 high on each side. Okay, so now there's 6 of these. So take 6 breads, each 2.5 tefachim tall, one on top of the other. What do you get to? 15 tefachim high. So what do you see here? That the bread nimsa shulchan mekadesh 15 tefach lemala. Okay? That's what he said. Okay, so Rabbi Yochanan says, according to the one who says that tvachayim v'mechtzah kofel, that there were 2.5 tvachim height of the bread, and it was shaped like in this, you know, open rectangular shape. The shulchan was mekadesh 15 tvachim lemala. So now they say, l'divrei ha'omer tvachayim kofel, nimsa shulchan mekadesh yubet tefach lemala. Some people said it was 2 tvachim, and then it would be 12 tvachim. So amarleh, so now what do you see here? What could he possibly be telling you? We all know the bread is sanctified, so it must be. He's coming to tell you that it can sanctify anything, even at that height, right? The shulchan. So if you put the kometz on, obviously it would sanctify it. So what did they answer? Amarle, eino mekadesh li karev, ava mekadesh li pasel. That means it can sanctify it in order to say something could become disqualified. But not enough to say, it's not enough, there's like a pseudo-sanctification, we've seen this before, not enough to say that you can actually sacrifice it. So that doesn't necessarily answer the question. If you put the kometz there, would you be able to sacrifice it, right? Burn it? Not necessarily, okay? Because that just means it sanctifies it in order to say this is kadosh and could become pasul. But not enough to say, not necessarily enough to say, that it would be likarev. Okay, we'll stop here. Tomorrow we'll get to the liquid measurements and how many liquid measuring cups there were. Many different opinions about that.